You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Thanks for joining us today.
It's a real pleasure, Dave.
And Dave got up early for the show. Dave's out on the left coast, so it's about 8 o'clock in the morning there. So, Dave, have you had your coffee yet?
Oh, I'm ready to go. My kids are off at school already.
Well, Dave, let's get right into the show here, okay? And as I mentioned in the introduction, you've written many books. I think, how many, about 10 or more?
I think about 9, because a few of them have been just updates of earlier works, so about 9 books.
Well, before we get into 9/11, Dave, why don't you, for the benefit of the listeners, give them a little bit of background about who you are, where you were born, what you did, your education, military service, if you had any, of course I know you did, and corporate history, and so on.
Well, I am originally from Massachusetts, and I, as a young man, thought I would be a career military officer. I went into the Army and was an intelligence officer, but I have not worked with the government for about 30 years. I got out in 1988, but that was a very interesting experience because it helped me see one dimension of really what I specialize in, which is helping people see solutions to overcoming evil. And there is an organized group. You know, sometimes it's thought of as an international banking cartel, but it's actually something more than that. And so I was able to see one dimension of that working in the intelligence service. And then I became a corporate executive. I was a senior officer, a board-level approved executive at MetLife. And at that level in the financial world, I was able to see another dimension of how the world's being organized and from behind the scenes moved into a one-world framework. And the last 10-plus years, I've been a full-time volunteer, and I've been working primarily helping people learn the truth as well as with acts of kindness, most of them being in Liberia, Africa, with a program for poor children that helps them live with the dignity that God wants for all of us. So that dimension of working actually internationally has helped me see with more clarity what's really going on in our world. So the result is I feel blessed to be able to help people see that there are solutions to the greatest problems that are in front of us. It's just that often we're not being told what these solutions are, and we're not even being told correctly what the problems are.
Yeah, well, I guess there's a reason why they're not, right?
That's because they know that in the past they've been defeated when people have become educated. And so that's why there's a book series that I've written called The Vigilant Christian. It's designed to help people really see how we're being deceived. In the Bible, there's a statement by Jesus in Matthew 24:24 that says, if possible, even the elect will be deceived. And we live in a time where we all have to be open to the fact that on some level we're being deceived. And when in doubt, what I do, and with the foundation that I work with, the Teach Peace Foundation, we promote that be kind, be generous, be patient, be loving. When in doubt, if you err on that side, you won't look back thinking you made a mistake. And so a lot of the messages that we see on TV, in the news, they're designed to make us afraid. They're designed to divide us so that we will do just the opposite. And the truth of it is most people are really good people. The number of people who are orchestrating this kind of evil, relatively very small number, and super wealthy. I mean, they're the billionaire plus class. They're the people that typically most of the people listening to this this radio interview will never meet a single time in their lifetime.
And that's a good thing, because I don't think I'd want to meet them.
Well, I think that's an important point to remember, because they try to divide us, and they try to get people working for peace, working for the truth, to fight amongst themselves so they won't see really who the true enemy is. That's why during the Vietnam era, there was a program called COINTELPRO that literally, you know, It made people in the peace movement think that other people in the peace movement were different, by fabricating phone calls, by deleting communications, all kinds of things, putting out false rumors, false claims about people. And those strategies are still being used today. It's just that it's a much more cleverly executed today. So anyone who's telling the truth, typically they're going to go out of their way to suppress any knowledge that that person exists. And the people that are promoting their agenda on some level, they'll make sure that they get the visibility. So even within the dissent group or the people that are working, say, for 9/11 Truth, often the names that are best known are the names that are secretly serving this purpose. People just don't realize it.
That's right, exactly, and that's been well documented. And it's so good to hear somebody say it, somebody with the background that you have. So let's get into 9/11, Dave. And like I said, we're going to be talking about some other topics as well. But you have written these books on 9/11. And let me ask you this, Dave. It's been several years since they've been published, explaining, of course, what really happened on September 11th, 2001. What exactly would you like people to know about the books?
Well, there's a couple things. First of all, 9/11, The Secret War, is the first book, and to this point in time, the only book to accurately explain what really happened, both in terms of who, how, and also the spiritual dimension. Now, there are many good books out there that come close, but I make that claim that sounds like a very bold claim. And as we go through this discussion, I think you'll see why that claim actually stands and has 2 feet. The other point is, if you take a look, we were talking about how there is a real effort to suppress knowledge of people who are telling the truth. That book, 9/11, The Secret War, the other books, I mean, last year alone, there were over 11,000 books that were shipped from the Teach Peace Foundation. So now we're going back many years, many, many thousands of books. If you go on Amazon.com right now and you look for the book reviews for this book, 9/11, The Secret War, there's either zero or one or some ridiculous number like that, okay? And if you look at many of my other books, Dave, you know this for a fact, the American Free Press ended up selling, I think, over 1,000 Atomic Bomb Secrets books. If you go to the Atomic Bomb Secrets on Amazon, you'll see same thing. I just checked this morning. There wasn't a single review when I pulled it up. Now, this is an example of how the very powerful behind-the-scenes suppression of truth works. People, they go on the website, they figure, hey, this book can't be worth anything. You know, look at David Ray Griffin's book has got hundreds of people that have commented on it, and this book has no one. And the publisher, I recently had a book published in Japan. It was on July 18th in Tokyo. And the Tokyo publisher said to me, he said, Dave, we've never seen anything like this. We've sold 1,400 copies of your book, and there are no Amazon reviews. Our own staff that have read the book are trying to comment on Amazon, and they can't get a comment on Amazon. He said, there's an all-out information war to suppress this. I said, of course, it makes sense. He says, we know it makes sense. You've got the first book ever published in Japan exposing Japan had an atomic bomb program. We know the government's going to go to great lengths. I said, I know this because I've experienced this in the past with books like 9/11, The Secret War. So, you know, just be aware of the fact that sometimes the book on Amazon with zero reviews is maybe the book worth reading.
Well, that's incredible in and of itself to think that here's a company that I use, and I've used Amazon since the late 1990s, and I buy a lot of books from them, mostly used books. You know, for a penny and $3.99 shipping. But if you think about, here's a company that's supposed to be obviously just a company, right? I mean, why would they care who leaves a review? Why would they care how many reviews are up there? But what you're saying is that that review process is corrupted, clearly.
Oh, so absolutely.
If that's the case, that this review process here is corrupted, what that means is that there are people working at Amazon whose job it is to censor comments. That, I mean, that's what it would have to be, clearly. I mean, there would be no other explanation.
At this point, all the big companies, the big Fortune 500 companies are in the control. And so when I was a senior exec at MetLife, we had special agreements with the NSA in terms of information that was shared with them. I mean, that's happening with Amazon. That's happening with everyone. And it's all part of this big NSA intelligence gathering effort, right? The company executives go along with it because they feel, okay, we're helping the war, the war against terror. They don't realize that the NSA was created and is ultimately controlled by another power. And that's why, it's really important for people. I'll give you an example, whether it's Edward Snowden or any of the other big whistleblowers. If they end up having a book or something like that that gets published, take a look at the big, big publishing companies and what happens to really ultimately corrupt or suppress that. There are many examples, by the way, of Amazon participating with the government more openly. So if anybody wants to look into that, they won't have any problems finding it. My point is there is an all-out effort on things that are absolutely true. And what makes my books unique is I remember talking with David Ray Griffin early on, and I had just got back from doing an interview with Osama bin Laden's sister in the United Arab Emirates. And so I'm traveling, to these places, doing firsthand interviews. And I said to him, I said, you've got serious mistakes in your work. Please, come. I said, I will buy the plane ticket for you. Come with me and meet some of these people and learn for yourself. And it's because I think that so many people were afraid to literally go into the Muslim world at that point, not realizing that they would be treated, with great hospitality. The real risk when you go on a trip like that is not from the local people that you're visiting or bin Laden's family or anything like that. The risk is from groups like the Mossad that find out that you're getting to the truth and they don't want you to know the truth because it serves their agenda for that to not be known. And so, yes, there are some risks involved. I'm not going to downplay that, but they're not coming from where people think they're coming from. So, in the process of doing these firsthand interviews, I learned early on that things were very, very different. Now, we know in the United States that for many people, 9/11 was an eye-opener because they saw three buildings fall when there were only two aircraft. And that, literally, to this day, is one of the biggest kind of catalyst moments that I've identified to help people understand this hidden power. What I have identified using their internal name as a Brotherhood of Death. So that's why you see my books, specifically the book with the title Defeating the Brotherhood of Death, focused on that specific name. But this group uses many different fronts. They use many different subordinate secret societies. It's all working for a common goal, and that common goal is more than just material wealth. That's why when you think of it as an international banking cartel, that's close, but it's not fully correct. And with 9/11, there were so many wonderful, courageous efforts to tell the story correctly about 9/11, and I applaud those. But ultimately, 9/11 was about spiritual objectives more than material, and that's where most of the books fall short. Matter of fact, there is no other book that's even remotely close to what people will find in Vigilant Christian 3, The Occult Religion of the 9/11 Attackers, because that book documents not just the Kabbalah special numbers, which some people identified early on because of their knowledge of Kabbalah, but identifies what ritual is being performed and how they're setting up the next ritual with the new architecture that's being constructed at Ground Zero. So it's a very, very difficult book for people to believe. Of all the books I've written, that's the hardest one because it requires you not only to have a knowledge of who this cartel is, not only to have a knowledge of the mechanics of 9/11, how it was done, why insider trades were placed, all these different things. It requires you to have some knowledge of the religion that these small but very powerful people follow. And with that, you can really see 9/11 with a whole new set of eyes, and one that will help you realize just how truly evil this group is.
What are they planning?
Well, there's another, certainly, 9/11 that's being planned. From everything that I can see, the next one will be in Chicago, but it's too early to say, and I don't have enough information to say that with concrete proof. What you'll find in my books, by the way, another thing that makes them unique, is what I do put out there is supported. And it's supported, you know, with such careful documentation that it allows the reader to do their own research and authenticate what's said. So, you know, if we step back for a moment, just about everything most people have ever heard about 9/11 has been from someone on TV who's not conducted the first-hand interviews, who's literally reading the script, okay? This even includes the so-called experts. If you look at the experts from this institution or that foundation or whatever, they're very often people with a PhD who did not conduct first-hand interviews. They're reading some report, and if you keep going back further and further, you'll find that a lot of the information was known early on. Like, for instance, I remember in a 2005 interview, I was being told that Osama bin Laden was being held in captivity in Pakistan. So, you know, you think about from 2005 to 2011 when he was finally killed in Pakistan.
Allegedly.
You know, all the not... Yeah, all the... Well, actually, if you know, I look to what his family says as being very important in all of this. And his family acknowledges that he was killed on May 1st in 2011. And so I also support that. It also makes perfect sense with their belief system. And in their belief system, they save their most special human sacrifices for May 1st. Again, that's understanding the religion, the bigger context and everything. So, yes, there's a lot here. It's very difficult to put your mind around. The president of Italy was early on, former president of Italy was one of the foremost people to nail it early on when he said, and it was published in the main, it's a major paper in Italy, the Corriere della Sera. He published that it was orchestrated by some of the world's most powerful people working together using the intelligence services that they control, with the Mossad and the CIA being directly involved to perpetrate this massive false flag operation to help advance the world to move toward a one world government. That's exactly what happened. And so the perception management campaign since then has been very, very aggressive, I mean, as you would expect it to be. And as a result, to this day, there are many people that know that don't know three buildings fell. So that's why you can't assume people know that. And when you say to
someone, I remember.
That's
true.
Yeah, so I often start from there and then move forward, because that is the smoking gun. Building 7, you know, also known as the Solomon Brothers Building, that's the smoking gun. And then from there, once they have that, people can go to deeper concepts. Like, for instance, why was Building 7 numbered number 7? Why was it called the Solomon Brothers Building? It's because in the ritual, the number 7 has a very specific meaning. The Solomon Brother name has a very specific meaning. In the ritual, it's the Temple of Solomon that's between the two towers. I mean, all of this stuff is explained in very, you know, in detail in the third book. And it'll be hard for people to put their mind around just talking about it initially. But I'll give you a little feel. Like, this is surface level, okay, Dave, for people. So if you take a look at, in their worldview, number 9 is the most evil, okay? And 11 is the number for ritual magic. So when they combine the number 9 and 11, it means most evil ritual magic, okay? There's research, very significant scholarly research that's been done to show that the actual true birth date for Jesus was on 9/11, on that September 11th. So in their belief system, which may be right about the claim about Jesus, they're reenacting something that is truly unholy to counter something that was very holy on 9/11. So then if you take a look at other key numbers in their system, like a lot of times you'll see 555, like the Pentagon, you know, it's 5 sides, 5 rings, 5 stories, okay? Or the Washington Monument is 555 feet tall, that kind of thing. That number represents, in their belief system, the highest death But what they're doing is they convert feet into inches. So 555 feet is actually 6,660 inches. In their belief system, they can drop to zero. So they end up with 666, which is a number most of your listeners are going to be aware of, means something to people who worship evil. So, you know, a lot of these kinds of things, like five representing death or the number 77 representing power, these all will make a lot of sense when you start looking at the specific story of 9/11. Like you have five terrorists hijacking a 757 to bring death to power, right? All this kind of stuff. What I'm saying is that's the surface level. You go much deeper than the Kabbalah numbers and all that stuff and understanding what really happened on 9/11 when you start to look at the specific monuments, the ones before the destruction, the ones after, and you'll see a story. I mean, it's not an example, Dave, or it's not a mistake that you see a minaret on top of the One World Tower right now. The minaret means something very special. And, you know, and just step back for a second. Here we have an attack that's allegedly, you know, performed by 19 Muslim men with box cutters, and then the tower for the One World building is a minaret, right? It just doesn't make any sense. But the of course, those 19 men weren't responsible. It's just part of the nonsense that people bought into. And another thing that will speak, by the way, for the value of the books and my credibility is if people go to earlier books, they'll notice that I wrote about what was going to happen at Ground Zero before it happened. So back when the official version was the what is now the One World building, when it was called the Freedom Tower, I was explaining it was going to be actually called something different. It was going to be called the One World building. And you can take a look at the publication date of the book, you know, all these other things that just have lined up. Because for them, they need to create this ritual at Ground Zero. And as a result, that leads to the construction, you know, the actual configuration of the construction. So there's a lot here. It's a part of the story that many of the listeners have, I'm sure, never heard before. But without understanding the spiritual dimension of what happened on 9/11, all the other details, important as they are, whether it be on insider trading or whatever, just won't be fully understood.
You mentioned that former Italian, I do remember that former Italian president or whoever he was, who said what he said. I don't know what happened to this guy. Is he gone? Did he disappear?
He died. Siglia, he died, but he was an older man, so when he did die, not many people paid any attention to it. It might have been a natural death. It might have been something that was advanced by hidden power.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, anyway, he's gone, supposedly. But here you mentioned, or he mentioned the Mossad, and then you mentioned the Solomon building, and of course, the Mossad is Israel's secret service, like I guess the counterpart to MI6 or the United States' Central Intelligence Agency. But I mean, that's a tiny little country. Really, I mean, they don't have much in the way of resources. They're not really a world power. Why is it that the Mossad and Solomon Brothers, and you know, why is it that a lot of people point the finger to the Mossad, point the finger to the Jews, or the elite Jews, not, of course, your average run-of-the-mill Jew?
Okay, yeah, that's a great question. And also, for anyone listening, if they want to check on, it's Francesco Cossiga, the former president of Italy. His article was on November 30th, 2007, in the Cura della Sera, and his specific excerpt that's the most famous in that article, I'll just read briefly. It's from sources near to the Palazzo Chigi, the nerve center of Italian intelligence. We know that the video of Osama bin Laden is fake because in it Osama admits that he was the mastermind behind the attacks against the Twin Towers, while all the democratic groups in Europe and the USA know very well that the attack was organized by the CIA and Mossad with the help of the Zionist world, just to blame Arab countries and provide a reason for the invasion of both Iraq and Afghanistan. That is why nobody in Parliament gave solidarity to Berlusconi, who is the author of the fake video. So this is pretty powerful. This guy is the former president of Italy, who's also head of their intelligence services at one point, and he's saying very directly that, you know, Berlusconi was responsible for that video. The one thing he missed, again, that most people missed, is it's the reasons were much bigger than just invading Iraq and Afghanistan. That was certainly part of it, but this advancing spiritually to a one-world government and a one-world religion, he apparently wasn't aware of, or at least didn't mention it in that excerpt from the article. Now, on your question, Dave, their ultimate fallback is if they get caught, they always set up Jewish people to take the blame, because they actually want Jewish people to be persecuted. And for this reason, some of the most powerful families in the Brotherhood of Death are appearing to be practicing Jews. They have Jewish names, Jewish identities, and they use Judaism for their advantage. You'll see there are rabbis that are hard at work that are trying to expose that this is what's really going on. And the reason for this is in their religion, they believe in a god, and the god that they believe in is the historical enemy of the god of the Jews, Muslims, and Christians, okay, the god of Abraham. And if you go back to ancient Egypt, it's perhaps the easiest for people. The story of the Pharaoh and Moses is well known. Well, if you remember, the Pharaoh, the god of the Pharaoh, was the enemy of the god of Moses. And that belief system, it really captures what's going on today, because it is the same religion that's being practiced. The people that are in the Brotherhood of Death believe it doesn't really matter how you treat other people. What really matters is that you acquire wealth and power, and that you can put this wealth and power in a pyramid and continue to live eternally with it, take it to the next realm, that kind of thing. Whereas the people who worship the God of Abraham, they uniformly believe blessed are the weak, the humble, you know, there's beauty in poverty, that you need to use your wealth. We're all children of God. You need to use your wealth to help people. And we also, you know, those of us certainly the Abrahamic faith, we believe that there's life after this life. So that war, that very spiritual war, that according to the Brotherhood of Death predates the flood, goes back to the Atlantis, you know, things that are now considered to be mythical, but in reality may have actually occurred. And these battles, Nimrod, all of these things are very, very important to them, as they are to Christians, but in very different ways. So the leading families that are in the cartel, they believe that they are descendants of Nimrod. So if you think about Nimrod, he's the first person identified in the Bible after the flood as rebelling against God. That's what the word Nimrod means. So, you know, these are really, really kind of historical bloodlines. It's very consistent throughout time. Most people don't have a lot of knowledge about ancient Babylon or other periods in history, so that's why I like to talk about ancient Egypt, because it seems most people can identify, yep, there was a god in ancient Egypt that was the enemy of the god of the Hebrews. And then if you look at today, everything that you see that has a major kind of false flag operation has the fingerprints of, you know, Jewish people all over it, because they ultimately know if people get close, they're going to use that historical trigger and put a witch hunt out there for people that are Jewish in order to buy them time to escape and reassemble under a new identity.
Right, but then the Jews are just like allowing this to happen. You know, they know that they're going to be used as scapegoats, and they're not preventing it.
I think a lot of people are literally uneducated. That's the first point. So then you got a smaller percentage of people that know. My experience is the smaller percentage that know, I used to work with a lot of them side by side, they're making a lot of money. And you will leave that world of making a lot of money very quickly once you start to talk about these kinds of things. And that is, to me, the biggest reason why many people are remaining silent. So, again, go back to 9/11. On 9/11, I had just come back from Italy. I was talking with the CEO of our company. At that time, his name is Bob Ben Moshe. He's now the CEO of AIG, at least the last time I checked.
Right, and, I'm familiar with that guy. And he's Jewish, right?
Yes, and he made major, major investments, very aggressive investments right after September 11, 2001. Well, it wasn't just him. It was the leaders of really the major financial services companies, the Fidelities, the Schwabs. Well, the reason why is they were all in a secret meeting with Warren Buffett on 9/11. And in that meeting, they were getting information about what was really going on. So they came back. They placed trades. If you take a look at MetLife, for instance, the largest increase in net assets that ever occurred in the history of the company occurs following 9/11. It's not people don't realize it until they look at the books about 3 years, 4 years later, because they hold on to a lot of the equity and then they trade it then. But the fact of it is, it occurs based on that billion-dollar aggressive trading by this one guy, Ben Moshe. So he ends up being a hero, right? He ends up getting promoted to get some more lucrative job. Matter of fact, he's, you know, AIG was the biggest financial institution to start to fail with the whole 2008 financial disaster. You know, he's brought in, paid many, many, many millions of dollars, brought in to, you know, be a hero there. Well, what people don't understand is that there is the Wall Street group, which a lot of times you'll say, oh, it's all Wall Street, you know, it's all about big money. But no, there's something more than Wall Street. If you go back to the 1912 investigation Congress conducted called the Money Trust Investigation, they studied Wall Street, this Wall Street dynamic, and they found out that it wasn't just Wall Street. It's actually documented as part of the official United States historical record. Okay, and you can get it from the Teach Peace Foundation if you've never seen it. And they show the dynastic banking families from Europe that are controlling through these Wall Street corporations, not just the United States financial system, but the finding of Congress in 1912 was they were controlling the United States government. And so what happened is they got outed, basically. They were counted. They were the official name of the group was called the Money Trust Cartel. And they renamed themselves. They bribed people. And they got the Federal Reserve Act passed the following year. And so the Federal Reserve, which is 100% privately owned, is owned by the same people, the same entities that were identified in the Money Trust the year before. Just massive, you know, propaganda. They bought the newspapers. They if you see a broadcaster on TV, a major broadcaster, ABC, NBC, anything like that, the main ones are going to be intelligence officers. That's just the way it is. And they play ball. They report the stories they're supposed to report. And when something big comes in, whether it's a JFK assassination or a 9/11 or whatever, they go to great lengths to make sure that no one gets close to the truth. That's the world we live in now.
And that's, I'm sure that's why you hold American Free Press in such regard.
Well, American Free Press is the only newspaper that is putting out information about movement for one world government, you know, what the Bilderberg meetings are about, you know, why it's important to know what happened with the atomic bomb in 1945, how that was used to move Japan into Region 3 in a 10-region one world government. You know, these kinds of stories are only coming out of your newspaper, and, you know, God bless you for doing that.
Well, thanks, Dave.
Keep in mind this. Yes. When people pray, that don't underestimate the power of prayer. The solution is there. I'm working on a documentary right now about Akita, Japan. The greatest miracles that have occurred in our lifetime occurred in Akita, Japan. People don't even know they happened because the media suppressed it. Over 100 authenticated miracles by the Catholic Church occurred between 1973 and 1982 in Akita. And God is trying to tell, is working very hard to tell us that if we pray to God and ask God for his help in defeating this brotherhood of death, God will supernaturally do it for us. And I know this sounds crazy to a lot of people, but if you think about what happened with Moses, Moses did not defeat the emperor with military, you know, a military uprising. It was a supernatural solution from God. Same with the Jericho. You know, the Hebrew people did not destroy their enemies in Jericho through just, you know, storming the walls. They carried the Ark of the Covenant around the city of Jericho seven times, and the walls came down on their own. God has a solution for us now, and that solution requires us to understand Fatima, Akita, pray to God for this kind of help, and we can bring about a period of peace and prosperity for not only ourselves but our children and grandchildren. that is beyond anything that's ever occurred in human existence. And that's the most threatening and dangerous thing that's been said in this entire discussion. That's the secret that they're going to great lengths to make sure it keeps is kept suppressed. Dave, the answer is in front of us. We just don't know it. We have to pray to God for his help.
Dave, you're a great man. You're a great American. And thank you for coming on and explaining all this to the listeners. And I hope that we can do this again real soon.
Oh, thank you for your kind words, Dave. And God bless you and the American Free Press for all the good work that you're doing.
Thank you, Dave.